give me a beat. Ouch! Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce the hi-hat. Go on. That's good. Now the tambourine. Right now.
This is Don Letts, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra. Stay tuned.
On Saturday, December 10th, the Brooklyn-based label Pure Magnetic brings its musical artists and collaborators to Catskill for an evening of tape-infused lo-fi, lowercase sound design, and glacial ambient soundscapes. There'll be performances from Hotel Neon, Taylor Dupree, Blank Forms, Chet Doxis, and Mika Frank, among others, at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, Saturday, December 10th. Turn out or tune in to a WGXC live web stream at WGXC.org of the event. From 8 to 11 p.m., Saturday, December 10th, at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for more information about this and many other local events.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Cochrane Media of Cairo, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
Hi, this is Michael Wilde inviting you to Mostly Singles. And if you like what you're hearing, you'll love this show. Rarefied music, premieres, and guests. It's different every time. And a podcast, too. Go to WGXC.org. Mostly Singles, every fourth Tuesday at 8 to 10 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Cairo, New York. The town near our house isn't fancy, but it is ripe. At present, it is still on the wrong side of the Hudson River. But there's potential. What happened in Woodstock, what happened in Red Hook, what's happening in Catskill could easily happen here. Our streets are sad in the way our bodies are sad as we dream of our beautiful selves. Floating, light, light-filled, transcendent. How could anyone have missed or overlooked us? Even with our bad haircuts, our paunchy clothes, our gin mill mouths. One day, some car drives by, and the rich folk who hunt for cut-rate rubies slow down. And here we are, they think, all ready to be scrubbed.
Welcome to Ginger Radio Hour on WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm Justin, and that was Cornelius Eady, the poet, musician, and all-around Renaissance person. I was excited to speak with him last March because he has deep, deep connections to the Catskills and Hudson Valley. Today, I'm featuring four, of my favorite Ginger Radio moments from this year. And Cornelius Eady was definitely one. So without further ado or context, here's number two.
Suddenly, luckily, you're here and I'm here, we're bound to meet. Honestly, you're all on my mind. me close, bring me in. Tell me you're tired of how you've been. All I know, you're all on my mind. So what you said to me, you take up all my time. And all this time
could play that rock and roll. I used to be singing rock and roll, woo, be gone. He have that thing just romping and tumping all up under my toes. At times, he used to make my big toe shoot up in my boot. He did it so good. He gave it all to you. And that's what you want. You want it all or none. But Jimmy had this perseverance to go on. He didn't mind looking freaky. Like I don't mind it. Because I was doing it before he was. And I know when he saw me, he gave him confidence and great recompense of reward. My Lord. Trying to spread a little joy and love together. To show the world that the end is not yet. That I got to take you higher. Not off of some cocaine or a piece of grass or some heroin. But Jimmy was going to take him higher than that. And he's always wanted to be this big star. But, you know, I never got a chance to see him after he made it. They would never let me come back. I said, why? What did I do? I had something to tell him. And I never did. So now I have to talk about it and let him know. It was good. I just wanted to let him know that I knew you was going to make it.
Never ever, 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 several hours, every ever, I just miss my mommy, I miss my sister, I miss my toys, I even miss mommy phone. How are you doing today? How do you shake a hand? How do you talk to people? That's the world of happiness. Sue and you, like we are, like butter and toast. We're like eggs and soup. We're in a bowl of eggs and soup. Go in a tea and rainbow and heart and song. Everywhere you get to take, you just take your heart. You just play a game, be your highness, just tickle your fault, then you fight out. Where's the soup? Where is the salad? Where's the soup? Where is the salad? I just want to rock.
You just heard a collection of audio and music from the Ginger Collective, a dozen or so creative people responding to a prompt I shared with them. Up next, an unedited and extended excerpt from my interview with the band Florist. Their new album came out last summer, and I decided it was the new soundtrack of the Catskills. Here's the whole band, Johnny, Rick, Felix, and Emily, talking with me about the record.
So much of when we talk about the record, like we're talking about our process together and our relationships to each other, which is like this huge part of the making of it. And it's a huge part of kind of the narrative of the album. But when you step outside of that, it really is supposed to be about like this like much larger scope of connectedness. So it's like you can feel us playing the music, and you can feel us in that space that is specific, you know, to this place, to the Hudson Valley. But at the same time, hopefully it's encapsulating a feeling of the connections between everyone, everything, wherever you are, really, and whoever you're with. And that being the thing that I think really, for me, I'm proud of, that we, I think, did that in a bit of a way that will be accessible as a piece of work to listen to for somebody in, yeah, another state or another country or another time in life and things like that. Like, I really believe in music being accessible, even if it's got a specific story or a life that it's representing or telling, or a perspective that it's coming from, but that it can still be universally, to a degree, meaningful. And so that's like a big purpose of it for me, and I think something that I do feel like I'm proud of about it, and to not lose that in any of the like it's we can talk so much about our relationships to each other, which are endless, but like, yeah, it's hopefully a bit meta as well.
I mean, I think it translates, right? The connections between the four of you can easily translate to a more, you know, that micro relationships can translate to relationships that we all have, that people all notice. Not necessarily just with small groups of friends, but to each other, to people we don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's, for me, what music does a lot of the time. I mean, this is going to be strange for you, because I know you're just human beings like me, but I feel like I know all of you because I've listened to a lot of your music. And in fact, I checked today, you were tied. So Ginger Radio Hour has only been on since last September, but there are two artists who've been played the most, and I went through my Tumblr today to check out the playlist. One, Florist, tied with Prince.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Holy moly.
That's the best thing ever.
What an honor.
Yeah. That is so sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other purpose of this album and this band is to become more popular than Prince.
Since the beginning.
Yeah, clearly.
Yeah. That's what most of the instrumentals are about.
Right. Like, yeah.
you had a whiteboard and you had a list of like the three things you were trying to do, and one of them was bury Prince. Oh, I don't mean that.
Yeah, the unapologetic dance grooves that are all over this
house. Yeah.
Yeah.
I went to Paisley Park a couple of years ago with my nephew, and it was really tremendous because he created all these different places within it to, you know, obviously he had a bunch of recording studios, but he wanted to be able to record everywhere at all times, both in like his private residence, but also in this, which was like the office. And so basically like every place had a place for him to sit down and play guitar. And if he wanted to record it, he could. And if he wanted to go into the big, beautiful studio, he could. Yeah. Maybe you guys should build a studio here in the Catskills.
We'd love to.
Yeah, it's kind of working on it.
That's the dream.
Yeah.
So as far as the collaborative elements, I imagine, so you said you were in this house for a month. Listening to the album is a good memory, I imagine. And I know you went there to do this, but I wonder what it was like day to day, because you were kind of coming in. Obviously you had some lyrics written and you knew parts of what you were doing, but then half the album is made up of these, I don't want to call them interstitial elements, but you know, audio sound recordings. I'm just wondering like how you managed it day to day, or if it just happened organically.
Definitely happened organically. I mean, we just were hanging out. There was a lot of time where we were not playing music. There's a lot of time where we were not playing music. I mean, we were together for a full month and just doing chores and playing video games and like, you know, and sometimes somebody would just wander into the space that we had set up to record and would just press record and would just start working on something and messing around. And I think that's how most of the instrumentals happened. And, you know, at all times of the day, just morning, night, just happened. And we didn't necessarily go into it with a plan to do it like that. I think the main plan was to see, you know, Emily had a couple songs that I think she had, just a couple that she already had, and then was going to keep writing songs throughout while we were there. And that was the plan. And we just ended up, because we were spending time together, and when we spend time together, we end up making a lot of noises, and we recorded a lot of them. And that was just purely, I think, recreational and like sort of just to get things out. Like, just almost not an exercise, but just like, you know, it was just a function of being there, was making all those extra sounds. And it wasn't until later that I think we decided to put a bunch of them into the album.
Yeah, I think it started to make a lot of sense too, because like I had a few songs written, and we would work on a song, and then I would go off and try to write a little bit more. And in the meantime, whether I was doing that or not doing that, there would be like everything was set up and ready to go. And like John's saying, like we would just walk in there and start making these instrumentals. And it was like kind of like the album is sequenced. It would be like we'd be working on a track, and then we would have this, you know, hour that we would just run the tape machine till its end playing some kind of instrumental together that was like super weird and just totally in the moment of it. And then as we were going back and like listening to the tapes, there would be a song, and then the instrumentals would come on, and we spent that whole month hearing these instrumentals as we were working on other songs as well, and as we were just kind of going in and making them, just as a function of being there. It's just like a thing that we do when we're together and there are instruments around, just start playing them. And then it was all, you know, the tone of all that was informed, I think, by us being there together and the things we were doing, and just like kind of being in life in this strange, like almost like it was a bit of a bubble, you know, we were kind of just in our own little reality there. And it was a bit of an experience in that way that I think everything started to pour into. And then once we had the bulk of everything recorded, it was like, it became clear that it all kind of functioned together as this organism. but it was a very like all over the place process. We definitely didn't have much structure at all or much of a regiment to get certain things done. It was very much just kind of letting our emotions just kind of guide us, and whatever the day brought, accepting that. And we did manage to make some music despite having no real discipline or plan or anything. But totally. Yeah.
Just because that is what we do together. Sorry. And that's kind of what it ended up, the album ended up being about, is just like, well, this is just what we naturally do together, clearly. And all of, even just in a day, like all of the changes that happen, like in your life, just in your experience of reality through one day, in when you're not making an album, like, but when we were together, you know, we ended up capturing a lot of that, I think, just by accident. So it made sense to just, yeah, sorry, but I interrupted Felix. So.
No, I was just thinking, like, this has been said several times now, but, like, you know, Emily had several, like, full songs written when we entered this process, but usually there was a whole album written before we entered a process like this, with, like, you know, a narrative arc. And like an understanding of what we were writing about and what we were arranging around. And for this, like the songs that Emily, that you brought, were like, you know, connected by their themes of connectedness and, like, you know, overcoming like hesitation and trepidation around, like, you know, interdependency in the world. And, you know, that was sort of our jumping off point, but it was really like three or four songs or something, and from that we just
nowhere near a
full album at all. And so it was a really unique process for me, and I think for all of us, to get together and be like, let's make an album because we want to make an album.
Yeah.
Like not because we sort of have something to translate. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't even really a translational process. It was like more like an excavation.
Yeah. I think it was a bit of an experiment as well. Like, we have always talked about over the years wanting a significant amount of time to work on things, and in the past it's been much more, you know, we have a few days at once to record and then a few more days here, and it was more, I guess, a straightforward, like, we're just kind of getting these songs down and that's the album. And, you know, that was obviously a fine way to do things, but we always, I think, over the years have felt that feeling of like, what would just happen if we had more time than we needed, even, or enough time to wake up at noon and then just like do anything else but make music until 9 p.m and then just play music all night, and like just this sort of like free form experiment of being together. I think it, that being such a huge part of it too, at the time that it came, was what informed the whole process. And ultimately, like, I was writing songs after we had already gotten there, you know, the rest of the record was written there. So it really did become about that little world and all the kind of limits we were pushing ourselves to. And in a way, like, that being freeing to be a little bit more like daring with how we're making and kinds of things I'm writing about, and just like, just really like pushing the limits and feeling like we can like just strip everything away and be our raw selves, and try to touch this thing that is super mysterious about like existence and what everything is, basically.
It is mysterious. I think this is a little bit maybe revealing of myself, but so there's something about surrounding yourself with both time, which I've done recently, and your things, whether it's writing or making music, instruments, making art. But there's a lot of pressure when you're by yourself doing it. And yeah. one of the things that I really am jealous of people who make music together in bands is that there's so much collaboration that is spurred by each other, but also it takes some of the pressure off, I'm thinking. Maybe not.
Definitely.
I was going to say, in terms of collaboration, that there was a fair amount of stuff where we were all four in the same room working on it together. Mm-hmm. There were some songs that we tracked mostly live, that sort of thing. But really, in terms of time, I'd say much more time was spent sort of, you know, we'd record the basics of a track and then, you know, someone would go cook some food or would just go like lay on the couch or whatever, and someone else would be working on it, just trying out ideas and sort of trading off, just like, you know, whenever one of us felt like we were able to work on it or, you know, inspired to work on it, we could. And that, right, that takes a lot of the pressure off, and you don't have to be like, oh, I'm not being productive, I'm sitting on the couch. Mm-hmm. It's actually like, oh, this is a process. You know, each one of us is having this little bit of time to try stuff, and that's like necessary.
Yeah.
And is productive, like ultimately, because
yeah.
Right, without any strict schedule, just basically doing this as a practice, you know, repeatedly working on stuff and going through that cycle, we ended up with a lot of stuff.
Yeah, so. I think it was like, it was both a group effort and also I think the trust that we had at the time and have with each other, you know, at this point individually, to go work on something without anyone else present, but like be changing the song, was something that happened a lot, totally alongside like us, yeah, playing something live and recording it together and kind of getting into that connectedness. There was also this like sense of separate collaboration, like Rick is talking about, where, yeah, there was a lot of different schedules going on and everyone would maybe be in and out of their like creative like abilities for the day at different times. And we would just sort of like figure out how to weave in and out of that. So it did, I think was based a lot in trust and like how, you know, it was this effort of individuals, but also like our connectedness to each other. Even when we weren't playing together.
I remember one of my strongest sort of like audio memories of the experience was at one point during the recording, we moved our whole setup down to the bottom floor of the house for a bunch of environmental disaster reasons. You know, the elements,
it started raining every day.
Yeah, the elements stopped being kind to our you know, vintage recording gear. I was going to sleep pretty early most nights up there, and my room was directly above where the recording started taking place, and Johnny was down there for several days working at this very complex string arrangement, like multiple tracks on the song Dandelion on the record, and I was just hearing the
at four in the morning
at all hours. No, it was beautiful. It was like my like sort of soundtrack to my like, you know, semi-conscious state, but it was just like it was alive like at all times, like in the space with just like people, you know, trying out sort of harebrained recording ideas. And also, and a lot of those harebrained ideas ended up on the record because they were genius, actually.
Right, many of them do, many of them don't. Yeah. And I think that's like the great part of that, is that you don't have to decide while you're doing it.
I'm a big believer in, I'm not saying the other tracks were mistakes, but there's something to just keeping like pushing and pushing and pushing and knowing that it's not all, you already had given yourself that time and space, but to know that it doesn't have to be perfect, this might not be the exact track, or maybe you won't use this instrumental, but then to just like keep pushing it and at 4 a.m. still work on arranging it or throwing something out and just saying, I don't know, let's try something new.
Right. Yeah, there was so much of that, like so much stuff that we both like didn't use and stuff that we redid, but also stuff that was just the first the first actual thing recorded. It was just like a very like nothing was, there was no law of like this, you know, has to be worked on for this long or this has to be this raw. It was like so many different examples of like, yeah, really,
yeah.
Like on Dandelion, so that's like the song John was working on the string arrangements for a long time. I do know that the bass track that's on the recording was like, it was me learning the chords.
Oh, right.
Along with Emily.
Yeah.
So Emily was track, right. We were recording the guitar and vocals and I was learning the bass part while we were doing that. And that, right, that ended up on there.
Yeah.
But then there's these sort of like labored over.
It was perfect.
Other arrangement.
Just like the way you were kind of going around, like exploring the song ended up being the song.
Mm-hmm. Right. So those sort of the contrast of those, you know, the labored over and the spontaneous.
Yeah.
Really like, I think. So that's just something we'd like. So
yeah.
I think
that ended
up there.
And then songs that we did like 10 takes on all in a row and then ended up not using any of them and completely so definitely the whole range of just trying to feel like whatever the thing is what it was in our heads, I guess, or
and it something that's I feel like we have like a really strong common language for now at this point is like we all know when there's something special.
Yeah.
And when like I don't think there were any moments where someone was like, how can we possibly get rid of this? It's perfect. Like everyone was just like, it's wrong. It's like, or like we need to like think around this, or like a feeling of like, it's totally perfect. Don't touch it ever again. Like,
yeah, definitely. Know.
I think it's
lucky.
Yeah. Well, I think you are lucky in the sense that, I mean, I've heard this on your other albums as well, like this trust and this intimacy. If you're going to be in a band, like those are really wonderful things to have, right?
Yeah, I mean,
we never forget it.
We
talk about it all constantly, the time, how lucky we are.
Like, just like, how is this even possible? How do we still like each other?
Yeah.
And I mean, more than ever, I think.
Yeah,
too.
Sure.
It's like we've gone through so much together and at this point feels like it's really just so special and lucky.
And to that point, forget the band, you know, forget the band. Like it's that's just like the icing on the top.
Exactly.
For sure.
The band is 100% just like the bonus, I think, thing about it. It's totally just the extra. Yeah.
Amazing.
I've never spoken to another band. I can think of one musician that I spoke to, more of a solo artist, although he collaborates. That was so good at talking about their work.
Wow.
So. Oh, wow.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. So kind.
I think that's also a product of like the just how long we've been doing this together. Like we like, you know, and we really understand it to a certain degree at this point, like what we're doing together, like, you know, even though we're still exploring, obviously, things feel like in clearer focus, like what we're capable of, like why we do what we do, like the specialness of the fact that we still do it. Like this is something I've been thinking about a lot, is just how rare it is for like a group of four people to continue making art together. Like,
continue doing anything, really.
Yeah.
Like most people, like, you know, like, and most musicians that I know, like, especially like most like very talented like songwriters and front people, will just be like, you know, they'll have like a gazillion bassists in the course of like a 3-year, you know, touring career or something. And it's like,
and that can be cool too. Like, there's nothing wrong with that at all. But I do feel super lucky to be.
It's cool, but I don't think it can go as deep. Like, it just doesn't, like.
Yeah, it's like a different thing. I don't know. Yeah, there's records that were made like that that I feel like are maybe more.
I think music just serves so many different purposes. Our story has one, you know, this one kind of major element to it that is, yeah, like who we are and what we're doing. And that's the beautiful thing about music too, is that it's like, it really truly is, can be put into so many different like scenarios in life and be this perfect, like, just experience elevator. And I think, yeah, all across the spectrum, I think, you know, it's can be tapped into to whatever that purpose of music is, which is so profound. But yeah, I feel like one of the things about us, like as friends, has been like a major thing that sticks out to me, is that like we have so often and for so long and in so many different ways been so like so uncomfortable around each other, and have like an ability to sit in that, like not uncomfortable with each other, but just like uncomfortable as a human with a body in reality, like, you know, feeling that heaviness of existence like around each other. And we have always had this openness to just kind of like accept that person and keep collaborating like emotionally, like as friends, just as people. And that, like, that feels like something that has become a part of like how we are like musically aligned with each other too, is like, it's like even during making this record, I feel like we were pretty like there were a lot of ups and downs emotionally. Like it wasn't just like we were having this amazing time and every day was like we were happy and just kind of making music. It was like a lot of times like super, super intense and emotional, and we're going through all these different things, but feeling comfortable enough around each other to be in that space and make music, you know, despite it. And even more so put it into the music in a way that I think can really encapsulate like a realness of being and like feeling that is, yeah, kind of what we try to do.
And if someone had to disappear for like, you know, 12 hours, it wasn't like, where the hell are you?
You
working on your part? It was like, the most important thing is that we're all taking care of ourselves and each other. Like, like that's sort of like you're saying, like the band is the icing. Like
the
relationships are, that's the,
totally. It's so strange. It's so strange that we even are a band. I mean, it almost like is just what we naturally do somehow. Like, it's like the friendship is the thing. And then for some reason we also go make sounds together.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's great.
Right. There's no like, right. There's no lack of conflict or something.
Yeah.
You know, and there never is with human beings.
Yeah.
But I think just knowing there's a lot of pushing and pulling in different directions, that's just something that naturally happens as people. But I think that's, to me, what makes what makes like musically things we make more interesting. At least when I hear something and there's like many different voices on it, things get pulled in a direction they, you know, that I might not expect or something like that. That balance and knowing that sort of having conflict, having not even conflict, but just different ideas, that's not a bad thing. And ultimately that leads to a what I think is more interesting relationship ultimately, and as the icing, the music.
Yeah, well, yeah,
right? Yeah,
totally.
It's very durable. I've said it's surprisingly durable.
Yeah.
What kind of cake would you be?
What type of cake?
What was that cake that your dad made at the house?
It was like a carrot cake.
Is it a carrot cake?
We probably would be a carrot cake.
I
would say
interesting.
Oh, all right. You don't want to be a carrot cake?
That was Catskill's own Florist. Go listen to their brilliant self-titled album. My last inspiration this week is tied to the birds of New York. So here is a selection from my vinyl collection featuring Cornell University's American Bird Songs from 1955. Birds way back in the day. And to set it all up, first, some music from the time.
American Bird Songs, Volume 1. Here are the songs and calls of 60 familiar birds as recorded in the woods, fields, and gardens of North America by the Laboratory of Ornithology at Cornell University. Some of the birds are widely distributed. Others are restricted to special habitats. And for convenience, they have been arranged in four groups, according to the places where they are most frequently found and where they do their best singing. Unless otherwise stated, they were recorded in central New York State. A group of 13 game birds concludes the record. Part 1. The initial group includes birds that nest in the North Woods, though some of them can be heard also in the South. The first of these, often considered America's foremost songbird, is the hermit thrush, now singing from a balsam spire in the Adirondack Mountains. Wood thrush delivers its shorter phrases from Canada to Florida. Now the ascending notes of the olive-back thrush among the spruces of the Adirondacks. Gray-cheek thrush calls and then sings from the dwarf spruces at timberline near Hudson Bay. A Wilson snipe is heard in the background. Next, the Veery's descending spirals near the Cornell campus. Thank you. A summer neighbor of the hermit and olive-backed thrushes is the white-throated sparrow. It can be heard also on migration in the south. The white-crowned sparrow is a neighbor of the gray-cheeked thrush at timberline. Through the night, the incessant calls of the whippoorwill can be heard from New Brunswick to northern Georgia. Morse code of the yellow-bellied sapsucker is less regular than the drum of other woodpeckers, and its call note is harsh. Northern alder flycatcher calls Phoebeo, a southern race, Fitzbugh.